Mr. Pear?
Yes?
How's it hanging?
How's what hanging?
Your dick.
Huh? It's hanging to the left.
I'm Edwards, and this is Perry. We're here to give you an estimate for the Cortez Brothers Moving and Storage Company.
Got anything I can write with around here? By the phone?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, well, like I was saying, well, we generally start upstairs, you know?
Upstairs.
Okay.
Okay, we got here the bedroom, huh? Master bedroom, bed, two antique tables?
Yeah.
That's an antique clock, too. Probably worth a lot of money, huh?
Yeah, that's worth it.
Chest of drawer, antique lamp.
It's a nice suit.
What? Give me my suit. This doesn't even fit you. Give me my suit. Jesus.
We got here the wardrobe closet, huh?
Hey.
What?
This your wife's underwear?
You put that down!
This is going too, right?
Back up! Give me this!
Okay.
Now!
Okay, I would say about three.
I don't care
what
you say. I want you out of here right now. I've seen enough of this shit. Okay? Let's go!
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
What happened to my fiancé? I know he's here somewhere. Ellen, have you seen my fiancé?
He's upstairs.
Are you going upstairs? Tell my fiancé I'm looking for him. I have lost my fiancé, the poor baby.
Maybe the dingo ate your baby.
What?
The dingo ate your baby.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality. The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
The great Richard Pryor. The late, great Richard Pryor.
Yep.
That was a movie that I thought, the movie Moving with Richard Pryor, where he moves to Boise, Idaho, and it's all of the trials and tribulations of actually moving your family across country, selling your house and all that happy crappy. And, when I first saw that movie, I thought it was like this big cult hit that everyone loved but never really talked about. And it turns out...
And you just realize that everybody just knows it doesn't talk about it.
Yeah, this is like the ugly Richard Pryor movie that no one talks about.
He did a crap load of movies, yeah. Like in the 80s, that nobody really talks about.
But, I mean, that one's really funny. I don't know why. It's really encapsulated. It's really the only movie that is any good that's about the process of moving, which is easily the most hellish process in the world. I mean,
and you moved this week, right?
We moved. We were living in a little studio apartment, Joy and I, and we decided that, well, it's a little too small for two tall people and two large dogs. So we desperately had to get out of there. And it was like this windowless cell, this Hannibal Lecter kind of dungeon cell, that it was just this terrible, shitty studio apartment. So we got this great, I mean, it's nothing great that we moved into, but it's got windows and doors, and it's got a couple of bedrooms, so it's actually, and it's the same.
Was that actually a selling point? Because yeah. I watch a lot of HGTV, and I never see, like, you're going to love living here. It has windows and doors.
That's right. The other place was basically like a cardboard box, and it did, but it had granite countertops, so go figure. But, you know, I had
Tom Felicia from the old Queer Eye is going to come by and gayify your apartment for you.
Well, see, you know, we started recording the show a little late because I had one of those days. It was just like a comedy of errors, the last 45 minutes to an hour of my life. Now, working from home, there's an advantage here in that you can kind of get some domestic things done while you're working, because you're working from your home. You can go down and do some laundry while you're working. You can walk the dogs. You can bring the dogs out while you're working. Today, those two things collided, and it wouldn't be so bad were this not a brand new building where we don't want to anger people.
Yet.
Neighbors and the like. And so, you know, I go downstairs to check the laundry, and I bring my dog, and we're walking across the parking lot to the laundry room of the apartment building, and my dog decides to stop right dead in his tracks in the pavement. And mind you, I've got a large dog. The dog is so, I mean, he would rather explode than to go to the bathroom inside. But he must have had to go really, really bad because he left this giant wet, like, diarrhea shit, like, right in the middle of the parking lot. And he's got, you know...
Those of you drinking coffee and eating your Egg McMuffin while listening to this tomorrow morning...
We should have... Maybe I should have prefaced that I was going to get to a shit story. But then, so I go and go to the laundry room, because now I've got to... I got to get to the laundry room to get some sort of towel or something, paper towels... to wipe this up, to get rid of this pile of crap in the middle of the parking lot of the place that we just moved into. So I go and I go to the washing machine, and it must have been like this high capacity washing machine, unlike the one we used to have at the old apartment building, where you just put a couple of drops in this one of washing liquid, and that's all it takes, because, man, that washing machine was filled with soapy suds. So I opened the door of the washing machine, this, like, Brady Bunch soap suds episode flood. It was like a tsunami of soap suds come pouring out of this. Oh, my God. So I've got this shitty dog. Soap suds are everywhere. I'm pulling whatever was in there out of there. My shorts are wet. It's like T-minus 5 minutes. Got to meet Chez for the show.
Right, so because I'm doing something really important tonight besides this.
So here we are. We're in a third-story walk-up, right? There's no elevator. And so I'm running up and down these three stories. My calves are like iron right now. Like running up and down three flights of stairs, grabbing like plastic bags and paper towels. And I got a big jug of water to wash. You know, you don't want your new landlords coming down and seeing, oh, yeah, that was my dog. And there's so few landlords who allow dogs. You don't want to be the one that creates a giant diarrhea shit right in the middle of the parking lot.
You don't want to be the person who's singularly responsible for them never allowing dogs again.
Exactly. So, you know, that was the last hour of my life. Goddamn believable.
I think I actually had it a lot worse than you, because I just watched the trailer for the new Footloose, which the second it was finished, like the 2 minutes and 34 seconds of my life that I'll never get back, all I could think was, I have no idea how I'm going to do this podcast now, because my fucking brain has just run out of my ears.
Was it really that bad? I can only imagine how awful it was.
Who came up with, you know, look, I'm actually, you know, I think it was Matt Zollerseitz from Salon this week wrote a really nice little piece about, you know, how it's, you know, criticizing movie remakes and reboots is like bitching at Starbucks. It's the kind of thing that, you know, it's easy to do and it's easy to be snarky about and elitist about. But the fact is, you go see them, and a lot of very good ones have been made. But yeah, you know, I mean, they're making them by the fucking truckload now. Yeah. And this is just... All I could think of when I watched this was there really some sort of public outcry by anybody to remake this piece of shit movie? You know, I mean, Bacon, God bless him, has gone on to a fantastic career, you know, and he was even, you know, some could even argue that he was good in Footloose, but it's just, you know, it wasn't a great movie to begin with. And now that they've sort of added the very kind of like interchangeable, you know, sort of Disneyfied Hollywood shitheads who all look exactly alike, you know, the sort of teen actors who populate these kinds of movies. Now that they've thrown a bunch of them into the mix, it's just, yeah, I mean, I'm looking at it and it's like, this is just going to be awful. But then again, who am I to bitch? Because it's really not aimed at me.
Yeah, I mean, it's not. You know, it's going to be one of those movies that, you know, 13-year-old girls are just going to love. And it was, and you know what? It was that way in the 80s. It was that way with the original. That movie was not made for you and me.
No, that movie
was made for girls. And you know, Kevin Bacon, I guess, was quite a hottie in those days. And I'm talking about his appearance in Footloose and not Murder in the First. Murder in the First was a fantastic movie. Not easy on the eyes. But yeah, I mean, that's the kind of movie
directed
it was.
A guy who never met a sweeping camera shot he didn't like.
Who directed that? I forget.
I believe, I'm not 100% sure, I believe it's a guy named Mark Rocco. He also directed a little, speaking of teen comedies, a little tiny movie that I actually, believe it or not, liked with the Corys in it called Dream a Little Dream. It was the Coreys, Corey Feldman, the late great Corey Haim.
Yeah.
Jason Robards, always fantastic, and Piper Laurie. And it was like one of those like body switching movies, but it wasn't done as a comedy. It was sort of like Prelude to a Kiss. It was done in this sort of like really sweet way. And it was cheesy, but there was something about it I really liked. And I think the running gag in my life was that there was one other person I knew who liked it. And he just happened to be the film critic of the Miami Herald, a guy named Bill Cosford. And I remember running into him. This is, you know, 20 years ago, more than that. And just saying, you're the only other person I know who liked that movie. But that's a totally awful tangent that I got off on who the fuck directed Murder in the First. So please continue.
But anyway, yeah. I mean, those are two very different, very, very different Kevin Bacon movies.
Right.
Anyway.
Well, I mean, you know, just to expound for like two more seconds, another thing that's really interesting about it is when Footloose came out back in the 80s, really there wasn't – it's like nobody in your high school was gay. Yeah. You know, if they were, it wasn't something you talked about. You know, it was just, oh, they're happy. They're – you know, it's like – obviously, gay people have been able to really come out of the closet and come out of the closet much younger now, I believe, than they used to back in the 80s. So I look at something like Footloose and I think to myself, wait a minute. You know, in the 80s, they had to sort of cast the big, you know, the dancing guy in Footloose as a straight kid. And the bottom line is, how many straight kids do you know who would oppose a dancing band and a dancing band in a small, you know, Texas town or wherever the hell it's located? That kid would be gay. Right. How many straight people do you know feel that strongly at the age of like, you know, 15 about dancing?
Hey, speak for yourself, man. I was a dancing fool.
Were you really?
I have no idea. I'm 6'4". You don't want to see a 6'4" man dance. It just doesn't happen. Hey, it's the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show. I'm Bob.
Final. That's, here we go.
That's Chez. Show is always brought to you by Bubble Genius. Pure products, pure genius. Bubble Genius at www.bubblegenius.com. And I'll be using some doggy Bubble Genius doggy soap on my dog later. Actually, you know what? He's not that bad off. He's not, you know, he's not coated. He just, you know, he just had an accident. He's pretty clean. He's a pretty clean dog. They're both clean dogs.
Very clean. Excellent.
Anyway, lots to talk about today. We do have political subject matters to discuss. I mean, yeah, I wanted to mention, too, even though I did play that clip from Moving where the Hummingbird Moving Company or whatever it is. Oh, no. It's the Cortez Brothers Moving Company. They're terrible. The movers that we had were great. And we work in a higher movers, but we must have 1,000 books if we've got two. And so it was just like it must have been 50 boxes of books that we had to move up three floors, no elevator. So we had to hire it. We had to bite the bullet and spend a couple $100 and get some movers, mainly to haul those boxes of books. And they were great. I mean, I couldn't believe it. They loaded up the truck in about an hour, unloaded it in an hour with the walk up. I mean, it would have taken the two of us maybe, I don't know, a couple of weeks to do that. But so we had a great moving company. And for the life of me, I can't remember the name of it. I think it's called, wow. I want to say it's like, I want to plug them.
Wonderfully half-assed endorsement there.
I want to plug them. I think it's called Quality and Fast Movers. That's the... that's the moving company. Moved us. Nice. I say it's Quality and Fast. Let's just call it Quality and Fast Movers. This is self-descriptive names. That's exactly what they were. They were very, very fast. But anyway,
nice.
In serious issues here, and this is a terrible segue, but it was just discovered that there's a 10-mile-long slick of oil discovered just in the Gulf. They just discovered, there's an airplane shot. It's actually, we've got it up on the blog. Ashby posted something about it. The BP oil spill, this is something that, you know, we're going to see, much like the Fukushima nuclear meltdown, we're going to be witnessing side effects of this, both health-wise and environmentally, for many, many, many years. And so I'm kind of bracing for just an ongoing array of, oh, look, we just found another giant slick of chocolate milk in the Gulf of Mexico. And no one's going to take full responsibility for it. And we're never really going to learn. I mean, there's still picking out Corexit, you know, dispersant oil out of the, up in Alaska after the Valdez oil spill. Yeah. So I think it's just awful and tragic. And they've got another one of those helicopter shots. I mean, it's really just hideous what we've done. I mean, it almost looks like the 10-mile-long oil slick almost looks like what my dog created in the parking lot.
Nice callback. Well done.
It's really, really ugly. And God only knows what it's mixed with. It's probably mixed with all of that dispersant. I mean, it's just we're going to have a gigantic dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico to add to the one that's already there, where just nothing survives. Wildlife swims into it. They don't come out. I mean, imagine walking around and suddenly you get into a toxic vacuum where there's no air and it's just poison gas. That's kind of like what these dead zones are, but they're, of course, in the water.
Poor Nemo.
That's right. And we still don't know what, you know, how much dispersant was dumped onto people, onto the land. Because you dump it and it just blows. It just goes. It just flows all around.
Right. I mean, no, I won't. I mean, I'm not going to argue with you about that. The crappy thing is that I think we talked about this last week in reference to Fukushima, actually. The BP oil spill is as awful as it was and continues to be. I just – maybe I am a victim of the sort of news cycle malaise, but I tend to glaze over when I hear about things like that. And I shouldn't. I shouldn't. I'm the first one to say it, that I'm, you know, I'm wrong. I'm wrong, Roy, about that, yeah. As I drop a Close Encounters reference. You know, I mean, look, it's terrible. It's awful. But I guess, you know, I right now I'm focused on there are so many other things. It's like, you know, I wrote at some point a while back. I said that I have a certain amount of indignation in my life that I can exist with and still retain the ability to function.
Yeah.
And I have to prioritize that indignation. You know, I mean, to coming off a week where you had the Boehner and Obama debacle, which I really think is Tommy Christopher hit it on the head. I think it's actually a lot, even though it seems petty and it kind of is at its core. I think it's actually a lot bigger than really people are giving it credit for. And it's the kind of thing that Boehner should step down for. But between that, Cheney, the hurricane, all that shit, it's for some reason, as awful as the BP thing is, and I'm certainly not, I'm not shooting you down about this. I'm just like, I hear that and I glaze over because I saw the same thing. I saw the story today, and I'm just like, fuck, it's one more thing. And I was like, all right,
yeah. Well, no, you're exactly right. We all get it. We get outrage fatigue. We just don't. We don't. We cover certain topics and we follow certain narratives that we blog about and talk about. But we just can't do everything because we'd end up, you know, sitting in the corner like Glenn Close in Fatal Attraction, just like half naked and turning the light on and off.
That's
just,
it exactly. I mean, you know, the first time I mentioned that on the blog, I think, was a couple of years back where I was talking about the food we eat, you know. And I know this is a really serious subject for you because I know that you've written about it many times about, you know, agribusiness and the way that, quite frankly, a lot of what they do is poisoning our food now. And I agree with you 100%. And yet for some very twisted reason, I can't think about what's in my food when I eat it. It's an awful thing to say, and I know that. But, you know, it's like, as long as I don't have worms crawling over it, I'm like, oh, burger, fucking bring it on. I can do that. You know, I mean, and what I wrote about was a response to, it was a response to PETA bitching about one fucking food thing or another. And I was very much like, you know what? I can't take the time to worry about whether or not my food is going to, you know, germs are going to fuck up my food or salmonella or whatever. And I don't have time to worry about whether or not the cow that I am eating was treated fairly in, you know, the last few months of its life before somebody fucking stuck a chainsaw across its neck.
Well, so, see, I mean, we have to be selective about it. I mean, otherwise,
right,
like
but
I said,
I mean,
we're
but the good thing is, even though you and I, you know, you have your things that you get that you are rightfully, very rightfully pissed about, and I have my things, and that's cool. I guess that's the way it's supposed to function.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and we have to do this. We have to kind of pick and choose because, I mean, even with food, for example, I spent a lot of time blogging about food. I wrote for AOL for a period of time about it where I was covering Monsanto and food issues. But you know
I
mean?
Yeah, I mean, Monsanto, I get that. Believe me, I'm very familiar with that story.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, even though I was covering Monsanto and getting really deep into the whole idea of GMO and all of that and its effects not only on the human body but then also on, you know, farmers and the economy, you know, even still, I mean, I'll buy non-GMO products just because you can't avoid it. It's like it's you if you started limiting yourself in the grocery store, you'd buy – there'd be one thing you could get. And it would be like, right. You know, organic tofu of some kind. And even tofu is not good for you because it's got phytoestrogens in it and you'll grow man boobs
or something.
And I met
people like that and they make me want to strangle them.
Yeah. But see, yeah, and you can't do that. So like, you know, for example, I don't eat beef or pork. I haven't knowingly eaten pork in 10 years. But I haven't.
What are you religious?
No, I just decided I don't want those hormones. I don't want the steroids and hormones and antibiotics and all that crap that you get in beef and pork. And it's mainly
it's the
those
steroids
two
that make it taste so good.
Steroids make it good. But you know, so but occasionally I'll have a hamburger. You know, like an organ. If I find some sort of free range, well kept form of beef, you know, there's a place near here. There's also one in L.A. called The Counter, and they have great hamburgers. And it's all like free range, you know, grass fed beef that's humanely kept. And so I'll have a hamburger. As you know, so it's not hard and fast. I'll eat any kind of turkey, any kind of chicken. I'm not selective about it. I prefer organic, of course, but I'm not going to not eat turkey. Like if I go to a diner and I want to get a turkey triple decker, I'm going to get a turkey triple decker. And I'm not going to worry about where the mayonnaise came from in there, or the lettuce or tomato or the bread. I don't care. You know, you end up like there was a great thing with James Cromwell, a great storyline with James Cromwell on the old show 6 Feet Under on HBO, where he started to, and he had psychological problems in the first place, but he started to overthink that stuff and he got so bent out of shape and twisted around that he was digging a bomb shelter and stocking it and getting it, you know, and just freaking out, and he ended up having a nervous breakdown. And that's exactly what would happen if we start to internalize all of these issues and take them all in and try to wrap our arms and our brains around all of those
things. Like I said, you lose the ability to function. Exactly. You become a paranoiac. You will genuinely make yourself crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And you'll want
to crawl inside. I mean, there was, you know, once again, another HBO show. Wasn't there, isn't that what caused AJ to supposedly go over the edge on The Sopranos? The fact that he just kept watching like the Iraq War and he kept watching all this different crap on TV. And finally, he's just like, what the fuck am I doing alive?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, see, I thought that was more of he was following those things as a symptom of his depression. Like this is true. So I think it was kind of a reverse of that. Like he was depressed first and then he started watching all of these depressing things to, you know, kind of justify his depression to his parents or something like that.
I absolutely agree with we're on the same page about this. Yeah. I mean, you know, you have to at some point let go. And, you know, I think I joked, I even wrote it in I think I wrote this in the book that I wrote in Dead Star Twilight. I said a fear of germs is for people who don't have enough visible things to be afraid of. And that is a luxury I can't even imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I myself went through a phase like that for about 2 or 3 years, you know, maybe 10 years ago. And, you know, you start seeing those news stories and you start internalizing it and you see all those, you know, the Dateline NBC takes a black light into a hotel room and they show you all the food,
exactly.
the cum and all the disgusting, you know, dander and piss that's all over a mattress in a hotel room. And, or, you know, they test the fecal coliform bacteria on a salt shaker at McDonald's or something like that. And you realize, good Lord, I'm surrounded. What do I do? And you end up becoming like Howie Mandel, who can't fucking touch a doorknob without, you know, coating it in all kinds of plastic
and fabric. You become a germaphobe. You become OCD. I mean, and it's it has, it doesn't just have to do with things like germs or food or whatever. It as we've said, the sort of overarching topic of this conversation, it has to do with everything. It has to do with letting one particular topic or a series of topics that get you to the point where you can't do anything. You know, it paralyzes you.
Yeah. And so, you know, people ask me this question all the time. Why aren't you covering subject X? And or
oh my
subject
God, I get that constantly.
Why are you ignoring that in lieu of, oh, you guys spent, 10 minutes talking about dog shit or what, you know? And, you know, it's for the purpose of sanity. You want to maintain, because we're following this stuff every day, 24 hours a day. Well, we're not when we're sleeping. But, you know, I mean, every waking moment, you know, you're absorbing news stories. At least I am trying to keep up with, you know, having to maintain a blog every day. And it gets to the point where you got to go, all right, you know what? I'm going to post a bunch of sex songs this week.
Right,
I'm going to
exactly,
post just a bunch
yeah.
of songs about, you know, just gratuitous sex lyrics all week long.
My attitude is always, you know what, dude, I'm, you know, every few months like you, I have the, you know, the pledge drive, but I'm doing this for free. And that essentially means that I'm not your fucking jukebox. If I'm not writing about a story that, you know, you think I somehow should be writing about, you seriously, you can blow me.
That's right. That's exactly right.
That is absolute. Yeah, that's absolute horseshit. Between that and, you know, anybody else who blogs will understand and blogs regularly will understand this. Blogging after a while becomes if you put your opinion out there on your own website or whatever your forum is, it becomes the Wild West town that you in which you are the sheriff or you are the top gunslinger. And every once in a while, in walks some asshole who wants to challenge you.
Yeah.
Who's, you know, I'm going to fight the top gun. And after a while, I just, you know, when people get into arguments with me, like in the comment section or whatever, for no good reason, after a while, I'm just like, you know what, fuckface? Seriously, go tell all your friends that you beat the gunslinger. I could care less. If that somehow makes your life better to feel like you won this argument because I just gave up and I'm tired of listening to your bullshit, then fine. You have fucking absolutely have my blessing.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, and it happens all the time. I mean, there's always someone. And it's fascinating watching the sort of – there's a revolving door of commenters and people who read, you know, and admittedly, you know who I get more often than not to that's trying to piss all over whatever I'm saying, or people who actually stalk me, like do like cyber stalking, liberals. I get like fellow progressives, people who should reasonably, you know, with some disagreements here or there, like what I'm saying and agree with what I'm saying.
You have
the
same essential, yeah.
Yeah, and the guy, there's a couple of people who just, and I don't get this from anyone on the right. It's generally, they're just stupid. I'll get like an email saying, you're an idiot, and then they'll go away. But the people, right. There's one guy who emails me all the time, and it's my Wikipedia page somehow. And like he once put in that I was, edited my Wikipedia page to say that I was a member of the Ku Klux Klan.
Yeah.
Because evidently I'm racist in my support of President Obama. I don't understand that.
That was
exactly.
actually me. That it's was just, I just did that to fuck with you.
Right. I knew you were up to something. I said, you know what? This
I was
got,
drunk one night.
Yeah, it's got Chez's fingerprints all over it, right? Anyway, so, but enough of our yapping. Yeah, we live a hard life of blogging.
Right.
But at the end of the day, you know what? It's not manual labor. I see these guys out, you know, 95 degrees with 99% humidity in the middle of the scorching sun, just burning their flesh off and digging a ditch on the side of the road at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And I'm driving by, I'm looking at my, you know, looking at my iPhone going, hey, why isn't anyone remarking on my Facebook post?
Yeah, smarmy little liberal shithead.
That's exactly right. Show today brought to you, as it always is, exclusively by Bubble Genius at bubblegenius.com. Pure products, pure genius is the best damn soap in the world. It really, really is, and they should be shipping all new products to you if you order now from their brand new laboratory, which they have just set up. August, I guess, is moving month. Hopefully they didn't have as bad a day as I did today. But, well, we have a new update from the ladies at Bubble Genius, so we're going to play that right now.
Hello, Bubbleheads.
Hi, it's us, Bubble Genius.
We've missed you guys. We just wanted to say hi again to Bob and Chez and all the fabulous listeners out there and let you know that we are back. Almost in action.
We're back. Yes.
We are back.
It's September.
We're not quite sure what happened. We're glad to be back. We lost track of
Was there an August? Anyway, we've almost finished moving into our new space.
Woohoo!
And it's looking good, man.
Yeah, we are ready almost to make some soap again.
Yay!
We hope you had a restful summer, but if you didn't, we'd like to encourage you to do what we plan on doing for the next month. Well, at least whenever we can, which is...
Not jack shit.
Not jack shit. Hey, maybe that should be the promo code.
Yeah, that's the promo code.
All right.
You will get, let's see, what should they get? 20%. 20%!
20% off.
Off.
That's NOTJACKSHIT.
And sorry, guys, for making you do the talking, but we know how hard it is.
We'll try to make it easier
that's
on
what
you
she
now.
Said. All right, bye, guys. We'll try to have a commercial for you next week
from BubbleGenius.com.
Wait for the bubbles, Bob.
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Yeah. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Do it. Help us out on iTunes. Why don't you? And leave a positive review if you can. It only takes a second. Yeah, obviously put in your promo code, not jack shit. NOTJACKSHIT. And get 20% off your entire order from BubbleGenius.com. And it was funny that they were mentioning that. You know, here I was last week on the show complaining that we had to do the show without a Bubble Genius commercial. And we just, you know, kind of bullshit a commercial twice. It's so hard. Talking about Bubble Genius. Talking about soap. And, you know, there are people who work at the DMV for 8 hours a day processing the most mundane assholes through, you know, the driver's license, and they get to work in air conditioning. But Lord, I went there and got my driver's license renewed a couple of weeks ago, and I'm looking at these people. I'm going, I'm the employees who actually have to work at the DMV, suckiest job imaginable. I mean, just repetitive.
Yeah, but they're kind of the suckiest people imaginable.
Well, they're working in the suckiest job.
Okay, so which came first, the chicken or the egg?
The chicken or the egg? Yeah.
Are they shitheads or were they made shitheads by society, so to speak?
I think they were generally made shitheads by the process of working at the DMV. But yeah, I don't think the DMV actually attracts, like, we're going to go out and we're going to recruit shitheads.
Hey, the TSA does it.
The TSA does it, right. Yeah, you gotta find some assholes for that job.
Exactly.
You need some assholes to grope some assholes.
There you go.
That's the
motto.
The recruitment slogan.
Recruitment slogan, right.
The poster that you see on the wall next to the metal detectors. It takes a good asshole to grope an asshole.
Perfect.
Want to talk about...
At some point, we should actually talk about something important.
Yeah, something important. I know that the president's going to unveil his jobs plan in a joint session next week, and there were some bits and pieces.
Next Thursday as opposed to Wednesday.
Yeah, yeah. I will talk about that in a second. But the plan itself, they've leaked like some hints in terms of what it's all about. I think we should mention this real quick. This is from the Huffington Post. The Obama administration has thus far remained coy regarding the content of the president's high-profile job speech, with White House Press Secretary Jay Carney going so far as to tell reporters during Thursday's press briefing that he won't, quote, show any more leg on the details. But buried within the Office of Management and Budget's mid-session review of the current economic climate is a nugget that offers a bit more clarity about what to expect when the president addresses a joint session of Congress next Thursday. Quote, this is the nugget. Okay. Mm. Quote, the president will introduce after Labor Day a package of meaningful new initiatives to promote economic growth and create jobs. Duh. Continuing, these will build on the actions the president has been urging Congress to complete that will strengthen the economy and create jobs, but also include new measures that will accelerate job growth in the short term. These could include a mix of tax cuts to create jobs and provide economic security to the middle class.
Thank God.
Well, you know, I hate to see that language. You know, I'm all for tax cuts for the middle class, but don't
tell. I was being sarcastic.
I'm just
so tired of hearing. I mean, you know, everybody loves tax cuts, you know, but I'm just so tired of hearing that term, like you just said.
Well, it's a misconception that tax cuts actually create jobs. There's no evidence that tax cuts create jobs.
Of course they don't.
Show me the numbers for that. I don't right. see where
no,
tax.
No, they don't. That's Randy and horse shit.
Yeah, I mean, we've had 10 years of the Bush tax cuts, and we've got massive job losses that have occurred throughout that 10 years. You know, you want to talk about where are the jobs? Look at the Bush tax cuts. Where are the goddamn jobs there? There are no jobs. I mean, we were hemorrhaging jobs for the last 10 years. But anyway, so according to the OMB, tax cuts create jobs somehow. Innovative infrastructure ideas, that's the other thing they're going to do, to put people back to work. Well, that is actually going to work. Infrastructure jobs put people to work. Why? Sure. Because you build things and you have to hire people to build those things. So that makes perfect sense. I don't know where this trickle-down idea that cutting taxes for I don't know who will actually create jobs. People who have their taxes cut do not hire more people. At least not
enough. Yeah, but
where the hell
are they going
to
get the money to pay for infrastructure improvements?
Well, yeah, that's what I'd like to see. I do think that a lot of this is political. I think this is. I don't think there's any realistic notion that the House of Representatives is going to vote for anything that the president has proposed.
Oh no, they. It's so far now beyond the notion of delegitimizing him and pushing him out to the side. It's almost not worth talking about anymore. It's so in your face.
Yeah. I mean,
so yeah, they're never they'll we've said this before till we're blue in the face. They'll watch the country burn before they give him anything.
Well, the whole idea here is to underscore the fact that they will do that. I mean, that's what the president's basically doing. He's saying, "Look, I've got a plan. Those other bozos, those clowns on the right, they don't have any fucking clue. They're just going to play grab ass on TV during their debate and, you know, talk about, you know, abortion and guns. And meanwhile, here, I've got this great plan." Now, he was going to do it. It was a great bit of politics going on. He was going to do it at the same time, as we all are aware of at this point. He scheduled the joint session speech on the same night as the Republican debate next week. There's a debate on MSNBC. I think it's Politico is also hosting it.
Politico and NBC News, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then the president backed off. I think he had no intention of doing it on the same night anyway. They don't want to mix the news cycles. And they can create plenty of contrast by doing it the next night anyway. In fact, it's better the next night. Because, you know, you can talk about how ridiculous these Republican candidates are, how Rick Perry is going to get the nomination. And then that'll last for about 12 hours. And then it's all about what's the president going to talk about in a joint session speech to Congress, which is a pretty big deal.
You sort of push that theme a lot, and I believe me, I actually agree with it. You know, I find myself agreeing with it quite a bit. I mean, Lawrence O'Donnell's another one who does it, which is basically that the president, he's so good at sort of the long game and kind of playing chess with these dingbats that sometimes when he does things that don't appear to, you know, and I'm not giving him credit for everything. I'm not saying that everything the guy's done has been, you know, brilliant, but a lot of the moves he makes over the years at first have not seemed to be something of, you know, the kind of thing that makes you go, what the fuck did he just do? And really, it sort of turns out that he's kind of quietly screwing over his opponents instead of just coming out and smacking them in the face.
Well, what happened here? I mean, the upshot is that John Boehner flipped his shit and wrote, you know, said a thing back. I guess it was a letter that he wrote back saying, well, what are you talking about? We're not going to do it tonight. There are debates tonight. Are you crazy?
Right.
And he was denying the president.
There is the argument that he put Boehner in a position to basically be Boehner and to be pissy.
Exactly. These guys aren't going to give the president anything. So the contrast is that the Republicans look like just phenomenal assholes. And that job well done. Success. Big success.
Job well done, yes. But, I mean, I do, you know, I hate to play up the Drew Weston card. But, you know, I mean, there are times when I think that, you know, Obama can be sort of nibbled to death by ducks. You know, that he has to, I think, a little bit. I mean, first of all, I feel bad saying that he has to do anything. I'm a fucking nobody, and he's the president of the United States. You know, I'm in no position to lecture anybody in the White House on what they should or should not do. You know, I mean, I don't know. I'd very much, after a while, I feel like that image of him as somebody who backs down no matter what, that does stick. You know, somebody who caves. And it's not just, in my opinion, it's not just liberals who will see that or progressives. You know, it's anybody will kind of look at it and say, all right, you know what? Obama said he wanted this. Boehner came up, smacked him in the face, and Obama backed off. You and I are smart people, and we see it like, well, guess what? Boehner just played his, you know, tipped his hand again that he's a pissy little 12-year-old girl. But a lot of people don't see it like that. They see, you know, Obama not being a strong leader, you know, not even being able to sort of wrangle the dipshits against him in his own government.
Well, the strong leader thing makes a lot of sense. In fact, I haven't seen any poll numbers recently showing what his strong leader numbers are. But, you know, I do believe that a considerable number of people who don't happen to, you know, read our blogs or Fire Dog Lake or anything else actually want the president to kind of compromise. I mean, American people typically vote for divided government. It drives us insane when we've got, you know, a friendly president in the White House, politically friendly. But for the most part, we'd prefer to see, divided government. And I say not we, you and me, because I'd much prefer Democrats controlling everything. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, I think the president understands the prevailing wisdom in a broader sense, because, you know, all the polls show that, you know, everyone wants him to compromise. The people in the middle who decide elections, unfortunately, are the ones who want him to compromise. And I think
I also think that fewer people these days want divided government. I think fewer people want divided government than wanted divided government a few years ago, because now divided government means nothing at all gets done.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is no longer, it's no longer the days when the two sides may not have liked what the other, you know, one side didn't like what the other side was doing, but at least they would find some kind of common ground. They both loved the country. There was always the good, you know, and there was, for self-serving purposes, they knew that there was a large swath out there, and they weren't just catering a large swath of independent voters out there who really could make or break them. And they weren't just catering to their base, and they compromised, and they loved America, for God's sakes. Yeah. And that's, you know, when nothing gets done, the whole country suffers.
Well, that's and that's the upshot of it. While everyone sort of says, hey, you know what? I want divided government. I want to vote a bunch of Republicans into the House of Representatives to check the president, because the president is, you know, and I'm being a devil's advocate here. I obviously don't agree with this, but the president's spending out of control, and he's doing Obamacare and all this crazy shit. Right. He's turning us into socialists and all that happy crappy. And then they say, well, we're going to pull the lever for a bunch of Tea Party Republicans to balance that out. And then when nothing gets done, they go, well, you know, that's government. Government sucks. We got to change the system. Well, you know what? If you want government to work, you know, vote accordingly. Don't ask for divided government where you know the Tea Party people will never vote for a single piece of legislation proposed by the president, and vice versa. Don't do that, because all it's going to do is continue to disillusion you about how government works. It is possible for the United States government to work. We don't need to switch. It'd be great if we had a parliamentary system, but we don't. We have what we have, and it's never going to be a parliamentary system, no matter how much Dylan Radigan screams in these broad stroke ways about how it's the whole system that needs to change. Well, you know what, Dylan? We're talking about the economy here and how to best create jobs. Well, no, we got to change the whole system. Well, that's not going to happen. It's just not. You know, it's not practical. You know, we can't even pass a single spending bill to get us out of the deepest recession in American history, well, since the Great Depression. You think somehow, because Dylan Radigan's screaming about it, we're suddenly going to change our entire system of three-branched government? It's just not going to happen.
Right.
So, but nevertheless.
But yeah.
You know,
no, I mean, I get that, though. I do understand. I mean, it's just, you know, going back to specifically the Boehner and Obama thing, I mean, it's not just that they won't give him anything legislatively, that, you know, the right will not give Obama anything he wants from a legislative perspective. They, I mean, the level of sort of, like I said, the level of sort of dismissal of him and marginalization and, you know, you mean so fucking little to us. And really, you're so not really the president of the United States that fuck you. You know what? I've got Dancing with the Stars to watch on Wednesday night. So you're going to have to make it Thursday.
Yeah.
And that just right. becomes it does become not just for somebody who is, you know, because I'm really, you know, I tend to be very independent. There are actually some things that I'm conservative on. There's, you know, a hell of a lot of stuff I'm progressive on. But as somebody who sort of sits on the fence on quite a few issues, you know, I didn't even approach Obama being kind of pissed on by Boehner from an angry liberal point of view. I just approached it as a look, you know what? Regardless of what you think of the guy, he's the president of the United States, and you don't get to be that kind of raging cocksucker with him. You know, do you have no respect at all for the office? I mean, look, I wasn't a huge, God knows, I wasn't a huge George Bush fan. And I felt it by the end. He had devalued the office so badly that, yeah, there were things I was willing to sort of let go when it came to people insulting not just really him, but the office. You know, that's how much he had sort of devalued it that, you know. But at the same time, for most of the Bush presidency, as much as I didn't like the guy, it's like, look, he's still president of the United States.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He still stands for this country.
Yeah. I mean, if I met him, you know, on a rope line, I'd shake his hand and say, how you doing, Mr. President? Yeah. He said, like, yeah. you respect the office, certainly. And never in the history of America has a Speaker of the House denied the president and, you know, an audience in a joint session.
Right.
You know, it just doesn't happen. And so suddenly Boehner said, well, no, because we've got this debate going on. He looks like a dick and everyone knows that he's being a dick and he's, you know, he's just being utterly disrespectful to the office of the presidency. And this is on top of Boehner already having trouble within the Republican Party anyway. People just generally
don't. Tommy Christopher's piece on Mediaite is spectacular. I mean, he just, I think I put a quote up from it tonight. I mean, he just comes right out and says, not that, you know, Christopher's great, but it's a freaking another pundit. It's not like it's really, you know, his opinion means shit in the great scheme of things. But he says flat out, he's like, you know what? Boehner needs to resign. Yeah. You know, that what he just did was unacceptable.
Yeah. Well, from an historic precedent point of view, it's unacceptable. It's unacceptable from a decorum point of view. There's all kinds of things. But you know what? What the Republicans are doing by obstructing everything and completely unwilling to compromise on anything. I mean, literally anything. They will not negotiate with the president. And, you know, all of this sets an example. And it was this way during the Bush administration. The Bush administration did a lot of things where it sets a very nasty precedent that just simply cannot be sustained. And it needs to be killed. And thank God, you know, you have Barack Obama who came into the White House, who is actually trying to, and he is trying. He's trying to dissolve some of those things that were sort of becoming commonplace with the presidency, where, you know, it's not so much a unitary executive with Barack Obama anymore. And it was becoming that way with the Bush White House, and it was becoming very, very dangerous. And it outrages a lot of us when the president, you know, actually says, well, you know what, I'm going to back off of this one, or I'm going to compromise on this other thing. Well, that's the way it ought to be. I mean, it shouldn't be where the president says, all right, it's my way or the highway and nothing else. I'm going to do all these things by executive caveat or executive order and screw Congress. Well, you know what? We bitched about that for 8 years with the Bush White House. We can't suddenly say because Barack Obama is the president that, oh, yeah, he's got to act like that. And I know a lot of liberals make that mistake where we suddenly say, well, Bush did it for 8 years. Barack Obama should do it, too. Well, no, no. We've got to change that. We've got to stop that. And even if it goes against something that we prefer. It just has to. Mm. It's, there's a certain matter of presidential decorum that I think has to be upheld or reversed in a way after 8 years of awfulness. So
yeah, I think that things would be, obviously he would have you know, a sort of a lot more ammo.
Yeah.
If it were, if things were better in the economy.
Mm. Yeah, well, that's true.
You know, that would be, then it would be like, I mean, it really would be as simple as saying, look at these assholes, you know, just, I mean, he could do whatever the hell he want, you know, continue to get beat down by the Republicans. And if things were getting better, I mean, you know, the campaign commercial he'd have, I mean, you know, imagine it. Unemployment's down. And meanwhile, Boehner's being a prick and this is being a, look at these fucking psychopaths.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, the economy, rising tide lifts all boats, including the president's political boat, because, I mean, I think he would be a lot more empowered. And certainly the economy has, and we've talked about this a lot. I mean, I'm not breaking any new ground here, but just to sort of summarize that the economy is doing slightly better, but not enough to give, you know, the president that fuck you money. I mean, he needs fuck you money.
Fuck you money. I like that.
You know what I mean? You know, I mean, he just needs the ability to say, you know, F you guys. Look at the economy. Unemployment is at 6% and stock market's booming and housing prices are way up. Well, he just doesn't have that ability. I mean, that to me, that is the cornerstone of giving any president the power. I mean, for God's sake, a booming economy really kept Bill Clinton away from being, you know, convicted, you know, in that impeachment.
If Obama were a stripper in Tampa next summer, he'd just rake it in. Because once that did you see that story in, I think it was the Huffington Post that ran that today?
Yeah.
About how all the proprietors of Tampa's huge strip club industry. I've been to Tampa. I cannot stress enough. Jesus. Florida is mosquitoes and mullets, assholes and Amber Alerts, and Tampa's nothing but strip clubs.
It really is. I mean, there's a I've been there many times. There's like there's a causeway that runs between Tampa and Clearwater. There's like a there's like a dozen strip clubs right there in the causeway, for God's sake.
But article for anybody who hasn't seen it, the article was basically about how the proprietors of Tampa strip clubs and the rest of the people who are in their quote unquote sex industry in that town are preparing for the Republican National Convention
next summer
because it's going to be a massive windfall.
And you know,
Central Florida is like the amateur 18-year-old Chick-fil-A girl being banged by two old guys and having cash thrown in her face, capital of the world.
It really is. And you know, the Republicans are so repressed sexually. We have a new message from the ladies at Bubble Genius. And here we go with that. Where's the button for that? Oh, here we go.
Hello, Bubbleheads.
Hi, it's us, Bubble Genius.
We've missed you guys. We just wanted to say hi again to Bob and Chez and all the fabulous listeners out there and let you know that we are back. Almost in action.
We're back. Yes.
We are back.
We're, it's September.
September. We're not quite sure what happened. We're glad to be back. We lost track of.
Yeah. Was there an August? Anyway, we've almost finished moving into our new space.
Woohoo!
And it's looking good, man.
Yeah. We are ready almost to make some soap again.
Yay.
We hope you had a restful summer, but if you didn't, we'd like to encourage you to do what we plan on doing for the next month. Well, at least whenever we can, which is...
Not jack shit.
Not jack shit. Hey, maybe that should be the promo code.
Yeah, that's the promo code.
All right.
You will get, let's see, what should they get? 20%. 20%!
20% off.
Off.
That's NOTJACKSHIT.
And sorry, guys, for making you do the talking, but... We know how hard it is.
We'll try to make it easier
that's
on
what
you
she
now.
Said. All right, bye guys. We'll try to have a commercial for you next week
from bubblegenius.com.
Wait for the bubbles, Bob.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
That's what the name of the show is. You know, I just want to defend myself here for a second. It's been like a year since I would step on the bubbles occasionally with one of those bumpers. A couple of things to hit in the last minutes of the show here. I wrote a little bit about in the Huffington Post this week about how the Republican governors are all along the East Coast are all embracing socialism. And that's true. I mean, we could have guessed that. We could have seen that coming down Main Street, that, you know, these guys with Hurricane Irene bearing down on them, that they were all going to beg for FEMA help, which is just, I mean, what they're doing is they're just taking advantage of socialism. And that's exactly what it is. It's money pooled into a resource and then that resource being distributed around the United States, regardless of, did I just say irregardless? That is not even a word. That is one of my biggest pet peeves. You know, I think it's a pet peeve. Sometimes you have a pet peeve and you actually end up repeating it because you hate it so much.
It's a combination of regardless and irrespective.
Right. And I meant to say...
Refudiate.
Anyway, I meant to say refudiate. That's exactly right. But anyway, so it didn't
That's all right. I just referenced a fucking sitcom from the 80s. So what do you...
yeah, right.
The 80s or the 90s. When was Roseanne on? I can't even remember.
It was the 80s into the 90s, I think.
Okay, there you go. Thank you.
You know, it's Chris Christie and Tom Corbett and Bob McDonnell, all these guys who hate government spending, who hate government interference in the states, you know. But then there they were in front of microphones demanding that money be sent and resources be sent, or demanding resources specifically. The FEMA help to mitigate all the devastation from the hurricane. He will say, well, you know what? Just come out and say it then. Say that you support, you know, government help, federal government help. And don't deny it to people who need similar help. You know, you've got your state is battered and bruised by a major hurricane. And you know what? There's some people who need that for their bodies and they've got no help. They pay their taxes, they go to work, they contribute to the economy, they contribute to the government, they vote. Some of them serve in the military, and all they want is the ability to go to the hospital without going into deep debt, if not bankruptcy. That's all they want. It's the exact same thing, except on a macro scale. You say, well, you know, the state of New Jersey is really in bad shape. It's Chris Christie used the word suffering. We are suffering and we need relief from the federal government. This is Chris Christie, who cuts all kinds of things.
Hurricane Christie.
Indiscriminate.
In his jogging suit.
That's right. In his jogging suit.
My favorite thing about him.
Does he wear that jogging suit? I haven't seen him. Does he wear like a Sopranos type jogging suit?
You didn't see it?
No.
Oh, my God. Holy shit. During an appearance, one of his appearances on TV, it may have been the one where he actually made that comment. He was on CBS and probably a bunch of other networks, but I saw him on CBS. And, yeah, he's got on a tracksuit, you know, like big pussy tracksuit, and it says Chris Christie Governor on the left lapel there.
Oh, my God. Really?
Oh, my God.
That's unbelievable.
Brilliant.
Was it like velour? Was it some sort of set?
Absolutely. It sure as hell looked like it.
Oh, my God. Did it have like pinstripes down the side? Was it sort of zipped down halfway down to his belly where there's a big chain hanging down?
Oh, like I said, just think Big Pussy from The Sopranos. That really is what it looked like.
It's if Big Pussy ate Big Pussy.
What I actually did appreciate about Christie, and, you know, I disagree with him on a million things, but watching him, it is, you know, it's easy to see how people can be, certainly how the right is like taken in by him, because when he starts talking, you do sort of appreciate his sort of bluster, you know? I mean, and when he's saying something you like, obviously it's entertaining as shit to watch. And I think what impressed me about Christie is the fact that he made that comment where he said people are suffering, you know, we need help right now. And it was so fucking hypocritical compared to some of the other stuff that he said. And yet, because it was so blustery, that hypocrisy is almost impossible to overlook. So whereas sort of lesser men, like, you know, the sort of sniveling Eric Cantors of the world or whomever, can dodge their own hypocrisy, I have a feeling that I think I wrote something about this yesterday. I think that Christie's when Christie comes out and says something that is vehemently sort of anti-Randian, anti-Tea Party, I think that kind of thing sticks. And I think that that is the kind of thing that gets the attention of sort of the independent voters. And over time, as the Tea Party starts to kind of, you know, burn itself up from the inside out, as it starts to implode, I think the Christie's anti-Tea Party statements will actually be one of the reasons why, because I think that they will resonate further than anyone else saying them.
Yeah, I mean, that may be true, but it certainly doesn't do anything for his level of self-contradiction. I mean, you can't do...
No, not at all. But what I'm saying is his bluster makes that contradiction much less harder to, a lot more difficult for him to dodge.
Yeah. Well, that's true. I mean, it does get, you know, you kind of miss it. And
Other people are sneaky. You know, you can get away with, maybe I didn't say that, or maybe, you know, that kind of thing. Christie is so fucking in your face, mm-hmm. that I actually really do think that, like I said, his hypocrisy is sort of impossible to get away from. You can't dodge it. So, yeah, I think that in the end, I think that his anti-Tea Party statements, especially, this one about how people are suffering and we need federal help, I think that shit's going to stick.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, but he could end up doing something where he's triangulating so much that he ends up just angering everybody. You know, and he's not very popular, despite what you see on cable news. He's not a popular guy in New Jersey.
No, he's not. He's sort of, you know, he has the Rudy Giuliani thing going, which is that there are people outside of the state of New Jersey who look at him and think, you know what? Straight talking, you know, I kind of like the fact that he's quote unquote, where have you heard this before? Just like me.
Yeah, just a couple of things I wanted to mention here, getting out of the podcast at this point. So Al Sharpton used the words unmitigated gall talking about the joint session speech and Boehner's reaction. You know, I wanted to mention that real quick. You know what? It's the worst kind of argument just to say, how dare you? And I see that all the time on MSNBC with Ed Schultz and now Al Sharpton. They just do these rants where it's their entire counterpoint to something the Republicans say is, how dare you? How dare you have the unmitigated gall? I cannot think of anything more hackish. Yeah. If you're going to be outraged about something the Republicans are doing, fashion a real argument. That's all I'm saying.
Sharpton is a cross between Gabby Johnson from Blazing Saddles and that character that Damon Wayans used to do on In Living Color, the prisoner who kept dropping all the malapropisms.
Right. Well, hey, but seriously, watch Rachel Maddow. What she does is she researches a bunch of facts and then says those facts. And that's what she does more effectively than anyone on television.
Quite honest.
But just saying that someone has, that John Boehner has the unmitigated gall to interrupt the president, that's not an argument. That's stupid. That's just outrage for the sake of being outraged. Anyway. Well, thanks a lot, Chez. Yeah. And thanks to you for listening and tuning in. And you should drive safely if you want. And we'll see you next week. Take care.
See you, everybody.
This your wife's underwear?